Introduce Hoko Kardegis, who's a Soto Zen priest ordained by Shohaku Okumura in Indiana, Bloomington, Indiana. Shohaku was at Valley Zendo in Massachusetts for some years and went back. He's Japanese and went back to Japan and worked with Japanese and American lay people and priests and did translations, was involved in every iteration of Opening the Hand of Thought. That was, I think, the first, and some other books, and then more recently, a number of books coming out that his commentaries and commentaries he's translated. So Hoko is ordained and trained under him and quite a bit in Japan as well, and also been practicing at the Minnesota Zen Center, where, of course, I spent a lot of time. Busy person, energetic person, and
maybe too much.
Maybe too well. It keeps you off the streets. For a year and a half, has been on a 2-year appointment as a resident teacher at the Milwaukee Zen Center. And Tozen developed and where I practiced with him for many years. Well, for some years. So she's there for 2 years as a kind of interim after my Dharma sister Tonin stepped down and retired. So she's here this morning. She's a candidate for in our succession process and has been here meeting with everybody all weekend.
Many familiar faces already.
Yes, continuing to do that. So, Hoko.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We also share a Hokyoji connection.
Yeah, and Hokyoji.
Because you trained at Hokyoji.
Yes.
And when Hokyoji became a separate nonprofit, I was on that original board, so I wrote their articles and their bylaws and all that stuff. So. It's been handed off.
It's been handed off,
so yes, indeed. All right. Well, so Dogen Zenji wrote in the Budō fascicle of the Shōbō Genzō, all sentient beings without exception are the Buddha nature. So what is this Buddha nature? Why is Dogen teaching us about this? Well, when Dogen became a monk, of course he was practicing in the Tendai school, because there was no Soto school then yet, right? So he was practicing in the Tendai school. And the Tendai school taught that Buddha nature was the potential to reach enlightenment. So the Nirvana Sutra says, all beings without exception have the Buddha nature. All beings without exception have the Buddha nature. Thus, everyone with a suitable application of effort can wake up and can become a Buddha. So this teaching about Buddha nature created a real conundrum in the mind of this young Dogen, this young monk called Dogen, as a young practitioner. And we sometimes call it today his great doubt. Probably you've heard of Dogen's great doubt. Why should we engage in some kind of religious practice to overcome our delusion if we're already originally endowed with Buddha nature and we're already inherently awake? You know, why do we have to practice? If we all have Buddha nature, why do we have to practice? And of course, he couldn't find anyone in Japan that could answer this question. He went around to many places and many teachers and asked this question, and he couldn't get an answer that really felt whole or really felt complete for him. So, of course, he goes to China to try to find an answer. And in China, he meets with his true teacher, Tendo Nyojo, and he practices and trains with Tendo Nyojo for some time and suddenly gets his answer. He drops off body and mind, and he realizes practice and enlightenment are not different. Practice and enlightenment are one. So we hear this teaching, right? Dogen, practice and enlightenment are one. And on this basis, Dogen thinks again about the Nirvana Sutra, and he kind of reinterprets it. And he says, all sentient beings without exception are the Buddha nature. And this is a change. This is a shift. So he has sort of reinterpreted this saying or this teaching from the sutra, and he's also reinterpreted or redefined Buddha nature. This is a pretty big shift. He's gone from seeing it as the potential to reach enlightenment to the reality of being awake. That's quite different. So this reality, of course, this reality of being awake is completely empty. It's beyond our ideas, our concepts, our thinkings and feelings about what that is. So it's a change from a concept called the potential to reach awakening or the potential to reach enlightenment to the state of being awake that we can't objectify. We can't put words around it or thoughts around it. So it's beyond the limitations of time and space. It's not a thing. It's not a person. It's not a being. It is completely empty. So if we equate this Buddha nature, idealize it in some way, or equate it with a soul or something, or give it some kind of characteristics, already that's not it. Because as soon as we put names on it, ideas about it, labels about it, characteristics about it, we've put some boundaries on something which has no boundaries. We've put some fences around something which can't be contained. So already we know that's not it. As soon as we think we know what it is, already that's not it. So Dogen had his great doubt because he didn't yet understand what Buddha nature was. He had only some idea about what Buddha nature was. So not unlike the way we might practice, we have some question. You know, he also has this question. So he wrote a text later on about his dialogues with his teacher Tendo Nyojo. He called it the Hokyoki. You might be familiar with the Hokyoki. But in this text he writes, "The mind that aspires to enlightenment arose in me at an early age. In my search for the way, I visited various religious teachers in my own land and gained some understanding of the causal nature of the world. Yet the real end of the three treasures was still unclear. I clung vainly to the banner of mere names and forms." So he's describing for us where he got stuck, as we might get stuck. Because at this point, he's still kind of working with or full of the Tendai doctrines that he learned in his early practice about what Buddha nature was. And he felt some kind of separation from the reality of what Buddha nature was. So he's stuck a little bit. So he's describing for us kind of his practice. So when he had this experience of dropping off body and mind, in Japanese we call Shinjin Datsuraku, you might know it by that term, dropping off, dropping away, body and mind. In that moment, he drops off any separation between himself and Buddha nature. Right? No separation. So he, in that moment, was no longer conceptualizing what Buddha nature is. It was no longer about his ideas about what Buddha nature is. He was Buddha nature. And he knew that deeply in that moment of dropping off body and mind. So that means there's no duality of subject and object, person and Buddha nature, the practitioner who manifests enlightenment, whatever that is, and enlightenment itself. Okay? No separation. So once we give up our idea about what awakeness is or what Buddha nature is, right there, it becomes the ground of our practice. So now, the difference between all beings have Buddha nature and all beings are, all sentient beings are Buddha nature, is kind of a fine point, right? And this fine point is one of the things that distinguishes our Soto school from other forms of Zen, from other forms of Buddhism. So this is a very central teaching for us. This is a very important teaching for us. People can make some mistakes about this. I'm always telling my own sangha, for the first time kind of in the history of the world, in America, we have access to all the streams of Buddhism in one place. Because, of course, historically, your form of Buddhism had was quite greatly influenced by where you lived. Right? So there would be certain forms, you know, in China, certain forms in Vietnam, in Japan, in Tibet, whatever. And so you were likely to practice the form that was that kind of grew up in your geographic area. Well, here we are in America, you know, in modern times, with the internet and lots of books and visiting teachers, and we have access to many, many, many streams of Buddhism. It can be really confusing to figure out, what am I reading? And why am I reading this thing, and yet last week I went to the Zen Center and Jisho said something that sounded completely opposite. What's going on? You know, there is no one Christianity, there's also no one Buddhism. So how do we kind of sort through that? So that's why I think it's important from time to time to talk about what is the teaching in our particular school. Not that it's better than any other, but you know, when we're reading in our tradition, this is what we're being taught. And yet we can encounter other teachings that say all sentient beings have the Buddha nature. What is that about? So as you read around and listen to talks on the internet and talk to lots of practitioners, because I understand you have lots of Dharma in town. We have many Dharma centers here, you know, as you're talking to your brothers and sisters in other Dharma centers. It's useful to know maybe what the differences are. So we have to be careful, I think, about what we study, what we read, and to know where it comes from. So for my own sangha, you know, I tell them, please read around. You know, it's terrific. But know who you're reading and what stream they come from, you know, and what their training is, because they may say something that seems a little odd to you, and it's because there's
you know, there's a different form. So I like to be clear, you know, prior to Dogen, the teaching was that the Buddha nature is the potential for awakening and that everyone has this potential. So it's possible for everyone to wake up, right? Dogen's insight was that Buddha nature is the reality of being awake, that everyone is born already in this state. And so Buddha nature is not about potential. Buddha nature is this, you know? So in this, if we practice in this way, practice does not lead to awakening because there is no awakening. There's only sort of getting better at acting from this awake place, you know, that we already have. How do we manifest completely and skillfully this awakeness, which is already here? Nothing to attain, right? So, you know, that's becoming a Buddha. It's not waking up to some understanding about the nature of reality or the nature of the universe. It's just manifesting this intrinsic state of being awake, which is already here. So, isn't this what we do in Zazen, you know, when we sit down and drop off body and mind? Isn't this exactly what we're doing? I think so. So this Buddha nature is absolutely essential because we can't be Buddhas without Buddha nature. It's got to be there. So our practice provides the necessary conditions for manifesting this awakened state. You know, we need to practice because it's what allows us to completely, wholeheartedly, 100% manifest this awakening which is already here. So at the intersection of these two things, this, you know, we have Buddha nature and we have practice, right? And right in that intersection, what arises is this actualizing of Buddha nature. So if we weren't already awake, if we were not already Buddha nature, what would we be manifesting when we practice? When we sit down for Zazen, you know, and we're dropping off body and mind, what would we be actualizing if not Buddha nature? So it's an absolutely essential thing. What would be arising? So we have to understand, I think, the difference between these two teachings about, you know, all sentient beings have Buddha nature, all sentient beings are Buddha nature. It's an important distinction. So it's kind of the cornerstone, really, of Dogen's insight. When he woke up, that was what he got. Not God as unacquired, right? No attaining. So Dogen says, as for the truth of the Buddha nature is not incorporated prior to attaining Buddhahood. It is incorporated upon the attainment of Buddhahood. The Buddha nature is always manifested simultaneously with the attainment of Buddhahood. This truth should be deeply, deeply penetrated in concentrated practice. There has to be 20 or 30 years of diligent Zen practice. Uh-oh. We're here for the long term. So if this Buddha nature is reality, or the reality of being awake, then it reaches everywhere. There is nowhere that it doesn't reach. There's nowhere we can't find it. It's not possible for any being to be outside of Buddha nature. All sentient beings are the Buddha nature. It's not possible to be outside of it. No one's left out. No one's left behind. Everyone's included. What a encouraging teaching, right? No one's left out. Even if we're having a day where we, you know, I do not feel like Buddha, no one is left out. So all sentient beings without exception are the Buddha nature. That means that everything that exists is an expression of Buddha nature, including this one, including all of us. We can't escape. We can't escape our Buddha nature. So as you read Dogen's writings, if you take this term Buddha nature now to mean the reality of being awake rather than the potential for waking up, at least for me, his writings make a lot more sense. Suddenly things become a bit clearer. So for instance, in his Eihei Kodoku, you might know his Eihei Kodoku. There's a big, thick translation my teacher worked on. Many small sayings of Dogen that he gave to his monks in the Dharma Hall. In one of them he says, the Buddha nature of time and season, causes and conditions is perfectly complete in past and future and in each moment. Despite differences between merits gathered or layers of virtue, milk and cheese completely earn their names in their own times. Now, I'm living in Wisconsin at the moment. I got to talk about some cheese. Somehow that one means a lot to me. So the Buddha nature, or the reality of being awake, is perfectly complete in past and future and each moment. So, you know, whereas potential by its nature is not complete. We're waiting for something, right? So he's saying, you know, Buddha nature is complete. It can't be a potential because it would be, we're still waiting for something to happen. Despite merits gathered, milk and cheese completely earn their names in their own time. So there is no process of ripening milk into cheese. There's no process of turning an unawakened person into an awakened person. So milk is completely manifesting Buddha nature as milk in this moment. And cheese is completely manifesting Buddha nature as cheese in this moment. There's no process. Buddha nature, there's no like before and after, you know. There's 100% milk. There's 100% cheese. All of it is completely the reality of this moment, right? Sometimes we call this Buddha nature. In Japanese, we call it Jiko. J-I-K-O, Jiko. So in Dogen's famous teaching, and I know you've heard this one, to practice and learn about the way is to practice and learn about self, right? Very familiar. To practice and learn about self means to forget self. Forgetting about self, one is affirmed by all things. That self is Jiko. That's the self that we're talking about. So it doesn't mean to study the way is to study one's self, or to study the small self, or to take it as an invitation to become preoccupied with our emotional states, to get on the cushion and do a lot of psychoanalysis, you know. That's not what he's talking about. It doesn't mean also to, when we see this teaching about forget oneself, it doesn't, in this case he's not talking about putting aside one's own self-interest in a kind of a planned and conscious way, like today I'm going to get up and do a lot of selfless action in order to somehow wake up. To study the way is to study Buddha nature. And to study Buddha nature is to forget our ideas about Buddha nature, to forget our concepts of Buddha nature, to forget our kind of limited view of Buddha nature. When we do that, we see that everything is distinct but not separate. I love that phrase, distinct but not separate. You know, we're not separate. Jude and I am not separate, but we're distinct, right? You've got some characteristics I don't have, I have some characteristics you don't have. But fundamentally, we are not separate. So this distinct but not separate, I think, is very helpful. We can kind of see that our distinctions are in some ways artificial. We need to say that there's a human and here's a human. But the reality is no separation. So that kind of insight, I think, leads us to act wisely, to act compassionately in the world, because we no longer have some idea about me as a separate entity that persists through time, disconnected from everything else, right? So we have some wisdom, we have some compassion. And those things, of course, can't be separated either. If we're compassionate in unwise ways, that's not really helpful. If we're wise in ways that are not compassionate, that's not helpful either. So that we have to have this integration. When someone needs help, we help. When we need to break the rules for a higher purpose, we do that as bodhisattvas, and we accept that karma. We accept the consequences, the result of that, because that's our bodhisattva way. But we know how to do that when we see clearly what is the nature of the self and its relationship, its interconnectedness to everything else. So my Dharma grandfather, Uchiyama Kosho Roshi, made up this expression, Jiko Giri no Jiko, which is the self that is only the self. And he meant it as a reminder to us not to speculate about the nature of the self, and that there was nothing really outside of this self. So he wrote this poem. What comes before you boil it up or fry it up by thinking? What precedes any processing by thought, the very quick of life, that is Jiko. So that's his description of what this Jiko is. Now, how can we know this is true? Until we wake up in about 20 or 30 years, we don't. You know? As soon as we think we know something about this Buddha nature, we've lost it, right? That's why we need faith. And in this practice, sometimes we're a little bit uncomfortable with this idea that there is something about faith. We need it, absolutely. Because, you know, if it takes us 20 or 30 years, as Dogen says, we need 20 or 30 years of practice, what's going to keep us on the cushion? You know, Buddha said not to believe things just because somebody said so. You know, he told us to sit down and verify it for ourselves. See if what he's teaching is true. And in fact, when people, when new people inquire at my of my sangha or in my center, you know, gee, I'm thinking about Zen and I don't know anything about it and kind of come and try it out, or gee, I'm looking at your center, but several others too, I always say, come in and try it and see if it feels like it's true for you. See if it fits for you. And if it's not, you know, maybe we're not your center. But I never say, oh, just come in because I've said it's a good thing. You know, I always say, come in and try it. See how it feels for you. Does it feel true for you? You're welcome to be here. You know. So, despite the fact that Buddha says, you know, I don't believe this because I'm telling you, but sit down and see if it's true, doesn't mean there's no place for faith in our practice. So in the Gakudo Yojinshu, Dogen says, those who practice the Buddha way should first of all trust in the Buddha way. Those who trust in the Buddha way should trust that they are in essence within the Buddha way, where there is no delusion, no false thinking, no confusion, no increase or decrease, and no mistake. To arouse such trust and illuminate the way in this manner and to practice it accordingly are fundamental in studying the way. So even Dogen says, there's a place for trust. So, you know, okay, we can't perceive this Buddha nature through the intellect, or we cannot always yet manifest this Buddha nature because we have some hindrance, we have some concept, we have some delusion. So how can we have faith? Usually we think, you know, seeing is believing, show me some proof, and then I'll believe it, you know. And that's tough when you're trying to believe in something that can't be described. You know, here I've just said, we can't describe this. As soon as we put words around it or ideas around it, you know, we've missed the mark. How do we do that? So, you know, despite my spending the last few minutes talking to you about Buddha nature, we can't get at it with the intellect, you know. So how do we believe in something like this? It's kind of crazy. Well, fortunately, Dogen tells us how to do that. He goes on to say, you do this by sitting. What a surprise. Which severs the root of thinking and blocks access to the road of intellectual understanding. This is an excellent means to arouse true beginner's mind. Then you let body and mind drop away and let go of delusion and enlightenment. So, not surprisingly, he's recommending to us, again, sit down on the cushion. So in our daily lives, we're required to work with ideas because that's how we do our bodhisattva work in the world, you know. All of our work is bodhisattva work in the world. You work in an office, you know, you dig ditches, you teach children, you stay at home, whatever you're doing, right, is bodhisattva activity. It's all bodhisattva activity. And in order to do that work on behalf of all beings, we have to work with ideas, we have to work with concepts. We wouldn't be able to function. If we don't live in that world, we're bypassing, right? That's not 100% engagement either. So we need to do that. But when we sit zazen, we stop working with those things for a moment, or for 40 minutes. And we open the hand of thought, my Dharma grandfather says, we open the hand of thought. We put that stuff aside. That makes room for this inherent awakeness, this Buddha nature, to manifest itself. Because we're not shoving it out of the way or covering it up with all of our stuff. You know, the reality of awakening gets a chance finally to manifest. So when we sit down and do zazen, we do it with the faith that it is possible to actualize this Buddha nature that we already are. And also, we have some faith that this is a good and wholesome thing to do, right? For something bigger than little me. This practice is a good and wholesome thing to do. We need that faith in order to establish any kind of practice because in the beginning, we don't have that personal direct experience yet of Buddha nature. Or maybe we have it sometimes, or we've had a glimpse of it, you know? But our practice, of course, is ceaseless. There's no beginning, there's no end. We have to keep practicing, we have to keep getting on the cushion. So in the beginning, we need faith to keep sitting down and to know that this is a good thing to do and that it is possible to 100% completely manifest this awakeness. So often it may seem, or sometimes it may seem, that our Buddha nature is kind of nowhere to be found. You know, we can't find the car keys, we've stumbled over the dog, you know, I left my rocks. What did I do yesterday? I left my rocksu here. I mean, you know, it feels like Buddha is nowhere to be found. We can all have those kind of tough days. But I think we can take some encouragement from this practice. So I encourage each of you to internalize in some way, experience in some way, that each and every one of us is the Buddha nature. You and you and you and you and you and you. We all are the Buddha nature. So what would you like to say this morning about Buddha nature or about whatever is on your mind? Or, by the way, ask me anything you want. I've been on the hot seat for a couple days, so I was like, bring it on. What would people like to know? Katie, what would you like to say?
So I'm still a little unclear about the Buddha nature.
Good, we all are. Please.